Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is a New York primary night special on WNYC. Good evening, everyone. I'm Brian Lehrer. And for the next hour, we'll talk about the voting that has taken place since June 18th, really, for the nominations for governor on both the Democratic and Republican sides, and lieutenant governor on the Democratic side. There was no Republican primary for lieutenant governor. There are other offices up in these primaries as well, and we'll touch on those. If you have intended to vote but haven't done it yet, you have just under an hour before the polls close at 9 o'clock. We'll partners for this hour in just a minute. We'll also go live to various candidate headquarters during this hour, and we're also inviting your calls. Who did you vote for governor, lieutenant governor, or any other office on the ballot today, Democrat or Republican? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You are invited. Democrats, who did you vote for, or who will you later this hour? Between Kathy Hochul, Jumaane Williams, and Tom Suozzi, tell us who, tell us why. 212-433-9692. Republicans, and we're going to talk about the Republican race first. So Republicans, who did you vote for between Rob Astorino, Andrew Giuliani, Lee Zeldin, and Harry Wilson? Tell us who and tell us why. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You know, we're always interested in hearing from late deciders who can definitely swing a low turnout election like this. And from what we're hearing, boy, was this a low turnout election. So if you decided in the last week, let's say, in any of those races, what was keeping you on the fence and what got you off of it, at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And what about lieutenant governor? Again, no primary there on the Republican side, but the Democratic race is really interesting. If the person wins in November, they will be the first New York statewide elected official with Latino roots, for one thing. There's Antonio Delgado running with Hochul, Ana Maria Archila running with Williams, and Diana Reyna running with Suozzi. Registered Democrats, who are you voting for in that race and why? 212-433-WNYC. And remember, you can split your ticket for the governor and lieutenant governor nominations, not in the fall, but in the primary you can. And we'd love to hear from some ticket splitters to tell us who and why. 212-433-9692. It'll be very interesting if we wind up with a Democratic governor having a lieutenant governor who acts like a watchdog or a public advocate, not just a partner, and that could happen. So who'd you vote for and why? For governor, lieutenant governor, or any other office on the ballot today? You can also call with any experiences you had voting in this election, good, bad, or just interesting, from your polling place or even your absentee ballot experience, or any questions for our guests about these elections. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. And joining me now are Bridget Bergen, senior political reporter for WNYC and Gothamist, covering power, institutions, and democracy, and Jenna Flanagan, host of the news program Metro Focus from the WNET Public Television Group here in New York, a PBS member station. Jenna is also an alum of our news team. So hi, Bridget and Jenna. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me back.
Hey, Jenna. It's so great to be here with you, Brian, and with Jenna.
Absolutely. Same here, Bridget.
And let's begin with the Republicans. The last time New York State elected a Republican governor, or I think any statewide candidate for that matter, was 2002, exactly 20 years ago, when George Pataki won his third term as governor. And Pataki got elected in the first place by carefully curating his image as a moderate Republican and, for example, very prominent at the time, a pro-choice Republican. So, Bridget, would you say we're in a very different time with a very different group of Republicans?
Oh, I think that is a very fair thing to say, Brian. We have four Republicans on the ballot today, only one of whom is openly pro-choice. That would be Harry Wilson, the corporate turnaround expert. The three other candidates, Rob Astorino, former Westchester County executive, Andrew Giuliani, son of former Mayor Giuliani, a Trump advisor, and Congressman Lee Zeldin are all opposed to abortion. And so I think that is one of the things that's going to be really interesting going from the primary phase of this race into the general election. How far can some of these candidates translate their positions when they've kind of staked out further to the right of what I think people perceive to be the position of a you know, large number of New York State voters. And of course, you know, the largest growing sector of New York State voters would be voters who are unaffiliated. So those are folks who cannot even participate today because you can only vote if you are a registered Democrat or registered Republican. So how do you appeal to those folks who, you know, have not, you know, opted to join a party and convince them that you should be the leader of the state, particularly if you're staking out positions, whether it's on issues of abortion, guns, or, you know, the veracity of the 2020 election results, something that is also at issue with among these candidates. That is certainly a far departure from what I think people would have considered a much more moderate candidate in George Pataki. So.
Yeah. And Jenna, part of the context of this election year, I think, is that in the last few elections, or I should say in the very few elections that were held last year, Republicans made gains in some contested elections, especially Long Island, which I know is part of your beat, where they unseated the Democratic incumbent for Nassau County Executive and one for County DA in both counties, Nassau and Suffolk. And the midterm elections for Congress are generally expected to show losses for Democrats, gain for Republicans this year. And that could be true in some New York State swing districts as well. So do these Republicans for governor think they have a shot, unlike the last few elections against Andrew Cuomo?
Oh, I would definitely say so, although I would argue that they always think they have a shot. But, you know, when you mentioned George Pataki's win in 2002, it did sort of remind me, even though he was from a, as Bridget pointed out, a very different Republican Party, it was still very much a period of crisis for the state. We're talking the year after 9/11 happened and with all of the upheavals with the economy that followed, et cetera. New York is in a similar state of crisis. And I can at least say for areas outside of New York City, north of the city, that, yeah, for a lot of people, especially working class, blue collar people who tend to make up a large portion of the Republican voting base, they are feeling incredibly squeezed. And more importantly, they're feeling overlooked and forgotten.
We'll go live in just a minute to Andrew Giuliani's primary night event as they await the election returns. But one of the big stories today, Bridget, other than the primary, is the latest January 6th committee hearing, which heard, for those who weren't tuning in this afternoon, more damning testimony about Rudy Giuliani, including that he asked President Trump at the time to issue him a pardon for any January 6th related crimes he might get convicted of. That's just the latest Rudy revelation. But Andrew Giuliani has had his father at his side as an attraction at many campaign appearances. I might have guessed going into this campaign that Andrew might say to his father, "Dad, I love you, but you know," and kept his distance. What does it say about how Andrew Giuliani reads the Republican primary electorate that he's had Rudy campaign with him so much?
I think that Andrew has made it explicit that he wants to run on his name, a name that he is proud of because of the job that his father did, and most certainly his association with former President Trump. He was asked about it in some of the Republican debates. He does not back away from it in any way, shape, or form. And I think he knows that there is a portion of the Republican electorate, you know, who do not believe that President Biden was legitimately elected, who believe the unsubstantiated claims of election fraud, who look at the events of the January 6th insurrection through a much different lens. And he is trying to appeal to those voters, I think, rather explicitly. And, you know, I think what is interesting is the way that former Mayor Rudy Giuliani continues to sort of, I think, show a certain deafness about how to appeal to the New York media, a story that has been sort of in the tabs and in the Times today and on Gothamist today related to an incident that took place in Staten Island over the weekend during a campaign stop, which was initially an allegation that a supermarket worker had assaulted the former mayor, coming up behind him, slapping him on the back, making a comment related to, you know, his position on abortion. It has come out since. There was a video of the event. The charges against that particular individual were downgraded, and it's become sort of fodder for the media. But it, you know, on the day of a primary where people are going to vote, when it's so low turnout and name recognition can be, you know, can be what seals the day, you know, it is a way to put
another.
One way or another, you get your name in the minds of certain voters. Yeah. And as Jenna said, people who are frustrated with the status quo, people who are, you know, not necessarily voting because they are thinking about issues related to the New York State budget, but they want to send a message to the people in power. Well, casting a vote for someone like perhaps an Andrew Giuliani would certainly send a message.
And as a footnote to that Staten Island supermarket story, Mayor Adams said today that it's possible that Rudy Giuliani should be charged with filing a false police report for exaggerating the extent of the contact that that supermarket worker had with him. But Jenna, in the Republican primary candidates debate that I watched, the WCBS debate, which took place after several of the January 6th hearings, none of the four of them said they consider Trump disqualified in their eyes for 2024 versus whoever the Democratic candidate is. And Lee Zeldin, who has the official state party endorsement for governor, was one of those members of Congress who voted against certifying the election even after the Capitol was attacked and then they reconvened. Maybe that's an actual plus for him, but it certainly doesn't seem to be a minus from what I've seen. How do you see Trump as a factor or non-factor in Republican primary voters' eyes in this election, next to the ways that on the ground New York State is in crisis that you were describing before?
Well, I see former President Trump as the factor, the deciding factor. He's still very much at least a culture leader for the party. And so the fact that, you know, some of the people, nobody on the debate stage was willing to go against and say that Trump shouldn't be able to run in 2024. That's where the base of the party is now. I mean, as Bridget said, this has become more about sending a message to people in government leadership, particularly Democratic leadership, saying, you know, I don't like what you've been doing. I feel like you've been ignoring me. I don't feel safe in my community, which actually going back to what you were saying about people who are unseated on Long Island, I can guarantee that was 100% about safety and crime. And then, of course, taxes would have played a very close number two. But those are the really, really big issues. And with Donald Trump playing up so many of these culture issues to the point where a lot of his party platform, I mean, it was very important to people, but if you ask a lot of Republican primary voters what they think about the president, it's the culture stuff up front. And so as long as he holds that cult of personality with the party, then no, you're going to be hard pressed to find somebody, even if they plan on running in a so-called blue state, to go against him.
Wesley Zeldin, as I understand it. Let's check in now with the Andrew Giuliani primary night event and WNYC and Gothamist reporter Samantha Max. Hi, Samantha. Can you hear me okay?
Hello?
Samantha, you there? Do we have you?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
I'm good. Can you set the scene for us? Where is Andrew Giuliani spending primary night? And what does it look like right now?
Well, it is a swanky affair over here. We are at, I think it's the National Women's Republican Club, just around the corner from Rockefeller Center. There's some smooth jazz playing, lots of chandeliers. People are mostly dressed up. I've seen a lot of American flag scarves and shawls. Everyone is very patriotic. And there's also a sea of red berets because Curtis Sliwa and his guardian angels are here working security.
Is Rudy coming tonight?
That's a good question. He has made no appearance yet, but one can only hope that the man himself will be arriving to support his son. So we will see.
So we will see. So maybe Rudy, definitely Curtis Sliwa. Have they indicated that they've seen any encouraging returns or expressed any reason for optimism?
You know, it's hard to tell. I mean, everyone certainly seems very optimistic and upbeat here. And this has certainly been an unpredictable race on the Republican side. Obviously, Lee Zeldin has been the favorite, but I think in recent days there have been rumblings that there could be an upset win from Giuliani. He's obviously got the name recognition from his father, so anything is possible, but everyone is definitely feeling happy over here right now.
So, Samantha, if Giuliani loses, do you expect him to declare that the election was stolen? Just kidding, but have you heard anyone there make any jokes like that?
You know, I haven't overheard anyone saying that. It's honestly pretty loud, but I mean, that's a really real question that we all need to be wondering if anyone will ever accept election results as valid again. And I think that it is, you know, a line of argument that can be used anytime someone loses an election now that they can say, I don't stand by, you know, the validity of this election. And that is something that I would be curious to see how he handles whatever the outcome is.
Last question, Samantha, very important question. Is the food out at the Giuliani event? And can you see what they're serving?
Yeah, so it is a sit-down affair where people are ordering food. Right now, everyone is mostly just drinking a lot of booze. The booze is definitely flowing. But on the menu, there's everything from baby heirloom tomatoes and a classic Caesar salad, whatever that means, to penne alla vodka and eggplant rollatini, or for everyone else, hamburgers and fries, which I saw a few of those already come out, and they looked like pretty much any hamburger and fries you would see for dessert, cheesecake or molten lava cake. So it's really quite a menu over here.
A hamburgers and booze crowd at the Giuliani event. Samantha Max there for WNYC. Thanks a lot, Samantha.
Thanks, Brian.
And we'll continue in a minute. It's New York primary night on WNYC. This is a New York primary night special. I'm Brian Lehrer with WNYC senior political reporter Bridget Bergen and Jenna Flanagan, host of Metro Focus from the WNET Group, a PBS member station. And we're taking your calls. Who did you vote for in the Democratic or Republican gubernatorial primary, the Democratic lieutenant governor primary, or any other office on the ballot today? 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692, or you can tweet at Brian Lehrer. And let's take a phone call right now. Jane in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jane.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was so excited and still excited that I got to vote for Anna Maria Archila today. I think that the word advocate has incorrect taboo meaning it's taken on, and I welcome advocacy. And I think that any person that pushes their way into an elevator to convince Senator Jeff Flake to not confirm Kavanaugh, you know, is the kind of person that any place, especially New York, needs. I mean, especially
right.
Women.
She had that, and for people who don't know, Anna Maria Archila had that 15 moments, 15 minutes of fame nationally for doing that during the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings, right?
Yeah. And additionally, I was really excited to vote for Jamani. I've always been a Jamani fan throughout his, you know, tenure time as public advocate and before that. And I also have to say that the closer Hochul aligned herself with Adams, it propelled me even more to be a Jamani fan. I'm just very unhappy with Adams. And the stronger I see Eric standing up there with Kathy arm in arm together as a second generation Native New Yorker and predominantly as a parent who's seen the attacks of the budget that Adam has done and how they're affecting our schools. I just know that Jamani is the way to go.
Jane, thank you very much. 212-433-WNYC for anyone else, agree or disagree, and on any of today's races. So, Bridget, we started out talking about the Republican primary. Let's turn to the Democrats, Kathy Hochul, Jamani Williams, and Tom Suozzi, and their running mates. There are many more registered Democrats than Republicans in New York State, but how is turnout in this election from what you can tell?
Well, you know, for the first time, here in New York City, the Board of Elections has been tweeting out updates throughout the day. It's actually been really interesting. The last update they tweeted was around 6 p.m., and these are early voting check-ins, and it includes early voting check-ins. So they have a total of about 370,000 people citywide who turned out to vote so far. You know, that is certainly down from the number of folks who turned out to vote in the Democratic primary in 2018. We saw about 900,000 people turn out to vote in that 2018 primary between then Governor Andrew Cuomo and Cynthia Nixon. So, and this, you know, these numbers we are talking about are for both the Democratic and Republican turnout in New York City. So, you know, we are expecting these numbers to be extremely, extremely low compared to what we've seen in previous elections.
Jenna, do you think a small turnout favors anyone in either the governor or lieutenant governor primaries? And again, they are separate elections.
Well, okay. So first of all, these are going to be party members. And as Bridget pointed out, name recognition is very, very important in this, even though you tend to have people who vote in primaries are going to more likely be people who are paying closer attention to platforms, et cetera. But I mean, I'll take a guess and say that this is going to favor Governor Hochul for right now, keeping in mind that it is the entire state that's voting in this primary. But I am a little concerned that if the numbers are this low now, what happens when we do this again in August?
Yeah, when the congressional primaries, so important, take place, as well as state Senate. But let's stay on today's primary. And with these three candidates for governor lining up from left to right on your radio dial, I've been wondering if, even though Hochul is considered the prohibitive favorite, if Jamani Williams, considered an underdog, might get this nomination as the clearest progressive in the race, while Suozzi and Hochul split a more center-left vote. Maybe she'll do well upstate, Suozzi will do well in his home territory of Long Island, and Jamani will do well in the city, which has so many voters, and sneak in. Or, Bridget, Hochul and Williams could split a relatively progressive vote, and Suozzi could sneak in. Is this all in my mind, or do the professional analysts or pollsters see any scenarios like these?
Well, I think the professional analysts and pollsters would be putting their money on Governor Hochul, in part because of just the massive fundraising advantage she has had throughout this campaign, and the fact that she has been, you know, while only for a short time, in the position of an incumbent. And because of that, you know, the privileges that come with that, right? So when you are making big decisions, when big things happen that affect New York, you become the face of the response. You become the person who can stand there and talk about how you are going to defend New York from guns, or you are going to fight for reproductive health, issues that would appeal to Democratic voters. I think if I had to kind of assess how the voters might split, while Jamani Williams is certainly the most progressive candidate, I think that you know, it will be interesting to see who has energized voters. I still think that there are some people who are interested in seeing the first woman elected governor, not just the first woman sort of put into the position of governor. So I think that that is, you know, something that could help Governor Hochul. Certainly she has, she sort of adopted that Rose Garden strategy and avoided some potential probing interviews, perhaps right here on WNYC towards the end of her campaign. And I think that that was strategic. I think that they were trying to just stick to their television messaging, blanket the airwaves, and hope that they could bring it home. And I think that there are certain voters here in the city that are just sort of the, you know, dyed-in-the-wool Democrats who will just vote with the party that will probably stick with Hochul because she is the incumbent. And that is likely to translate to other parts of the state because she has the infrastructure. How close it is with someone like Jumaane Williams, who did almost beat her in the lieutenant governor's race 4 years ago, I cannot wait to see. I'm very interested to see that. I do think the lieutenant governor's race is where things are going to get really interesting.
212-433-WNYC and FT in Queens. You're on WNYC. Thanks for calling in. Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to call and share an experience I had while I was voting this afternoon. I filled out my ballot, and then it wasn't until I was at the voting machine, at the scanning machine, to insert the ballot that I realized that I had actually gotten two ballots. So that is to say, I got two copies of the same ballot. I pointed it out to the poll worker, and the poll worker indicated that my table, right, like so the table I had gone to get the folder from, according to my congressional and assembly district, the poll worker indicated that table had actually done that before once previous that day. But this is to say, like, there were some older gentlemen who were working that particular table, right? Like, so I'm not accusing anyone of malfeasance. I'm not saying that this is a systemic issue. I think it's sort of like it's a pure accident. But as you mentioned before, this is a low turnout election, right? You know, and so especially for some of these local races, I don't know, tens of votes might really make the difference. And so I think it's maybe worth thinking about who we have staffing polling locations, and maybe just sending a little bit more money that way. And like I said, not accusing anyone of any malfeasance or anything like that, but I think it's something worth thinking about.
FT, thank you for reporting that. We appreciate it. Louie in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Louie.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. How about you, Louie? Happy primary night.
Nice. It's interesting that the guy had a bad experience with the with one of the workers. I also had a little bit of a disappointment that the person had no clue that I was at the wrong type of a machine, and the thing was giving me back my ballot, and I didn't understand why it was giving me back my ballot until and the person could not explain anything. They couldn't seem to pronounce English very well. But then the supervisor came and told me that that's a ballot marking device for people who can't hold their hands steady, and it gives you back your ballot with the mark on it. I thought I was at the, you know, machine that gives in the ballot. So, you know, that's what happened with me with the person. Anyway.
And who did you vote for?
I voted for Tom Suozzi. Not that I think he's going to win, but I voted for a simple reason, to send a message that he seemed to be a more moderate voice in the Democratic Party. I'm not I'm not against some issues that might be progressive, but I am against this issue of crime and letting people out, being totally blind to the damage of victims of violent crimes and the rise in violent crime, and the fact that there's so many repeat offenders that are not put in prison or not held in prison, and that they commit these violent crimes. I don't have to tell you, everybody knows about this issue, but the fact that the progressive line or the district attorney line is, it's like collateral damage for the progression of society. I don't believe that. It's disgusting. It's a continuation of ignoring the rights of victims of crimes. You know, there's not proper victim compensation. There's all kinds of issues with victims that are not
Let me ask you a follow-up question. Yeah, right. Considering your position on all that, if Hochul gets the nomination or Jomani Williams, will you consider voting for the Republican in November?
It depends. I might.
So your vote is in play. Louis, thank you for checking in with us. We really appreciate it. All right, listeners, who else on either primary, either side of the aisle's primary today, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Jenna, Swazi for governor, who the caller was just talking about, and Antonio Delgado for lieutenant governor on Hochul's ticket, Swazi and Delgado, both left their congressional seats for all this uncertainty. They gave up seats in Congress and the House of Representatives. Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, considering some of what's taken place, not just with January 6th, but also perhaps with a sense of, I guess I'm going to have to say defeatism, because if the Democrats are slated to lose Congress seats in both the House and the Senate, as predictions have been made, then where do you turn to try to make the difference in government that you want to do? There's also the fact that, you know, being in Washington, as we all know, takes you away from your family, and both of these men have young families, et cetera. But I think this is more about, you know, if I can't get anything done in Washington and it's just been so gridlocked, where can I turn to make the kind of difference that I think is going to make society better?
And I guess both of those seats, as you were suggesting, Delgado's upstate and Swazi's on Long Island and Northeast Queens, could potentially be swing districts in November. We'll go live to Jomani Williams' election night event in just a minute. But Bridget, I want to focus for the minute before we do that on the lieutenant governor primary. We had a caller earlier endorsing Ana Maria Archila, Jomani's running mate. And she's got that, maybe I'll call it an AOC Bernie Sanders base. She has AOC's explicit endorsement, but also that base who care and will turn out. Delgado with Hochul and Swazi's running mate, Diana Reyna, don't necessarily have a base to draw on like that. So we could see an Archila win today, who knows, and then potentially a Governor Hochul and Lieutenant Governor Archila in office next year, with the Lieutenant Governor being more like a watchdog than a partner. Can you describe how Archila has been campaigning in that respect?
Well, I think she has talked about how she thinks the role of lieutenant governor needs to be more than a ceremonial position with, you know, attending ribbon cuttings and traveling around the state, and really needs to be a position that gives a voice to the people. I think that that is, you know, it's an interesting position to take. You could certainly approach it not unlike the way people have approached the city's public advocate position, and using the soapbox dimension of the bully pulpit, so to speak, of the office to bring attention to issues. But, you know, under the Constitution, there aren't necessarily a lot of specific duties associated with the lieutenant governor's role other than to be prepared to be able to step in should you need to and become governor. So, you know, I think there is a very interesting potential there to see someone fulfill that role in a different way, and to you know, run her off, conduct her office as an office that is advocating for New Yorkers. How that will actually translate if they were to be successfully elected into action is something that'll be very interesting to watch.
If it comes about, and it could. Let's go live now to Jomani Williams' election night event and WNYC and Gothamist reporter Catalina Gonella. Hi, Catalina, can you hear me?
Hi, yes, Brian, I can hear you.
Can you set the scene for us? Where is Jomani Williams spending primary night, and what does it look like there right now?
Sure. So the venue for this party tonight is actually Lot 45. It's quite a popular bar here in Bushwick. They usually have nights like bachata night and R&B night. So it's very equipped to handle this sort of event. When you walk in, there's a big area that's sort of outdoors but covered. And then once you go further inside, there's a stage with a sound system. So, yeah, I'm actually standing a little bit outside right now so that you can hear me because the music is already going in there.
Is William's running mate, Ana Maria Archila, who we were just talking about, going to be there tonight?
Yeah, she's expected to come by once the polls close, so a little bit later after 9.
And are there prominent supporters we might have heard of when we checked in with Andrew Giuliani headquarters before? We heard about Curtis Sliwa as one example and probably Rudy Giuliani. Any prominent Giuliani supporters we might have heard of, or how would you describe whatever crowd is there so far?
Yeah, so not yet. Haven't seen any prominent supporters yet, though I'm told they're expected to come by again a little bit later in the night. Right now, it's really staffers that are sort of milling around and setting things up. And then the volunteers are expected to come in again once polls close at 9. So things are sort of just starting to get going here. The party's really going to start once the polls close and all those volunteers that are out canvassing till the very last minute start making their way over.
And is the food out? Can you see what they're serving? Very important question. We heard about the hamburgers and fries at the Giuliani event.
Yeah, so right now, the thing that is readily available is caffeine. Bushwick Grind is here serving coffee and tea, and the food stand is actually just getting going. I'm seeing the grill starting to heat up, and they're going to have burgers, tacos, and then Williamsburg Pizza is also going to start setting up their stand. So there's quite a variety of food and drinks available here tonight.
All right. And with that caffeine, if Giuliani takes the stage and say he's pumped up, maybe we'll know why, or at least one extra reason why. Carolina Gonella,
exactly.
Giuliani Williams election night event. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Let's take another caller. And this time in the lieutenant governor's race, it's Jimmy in Dutchess County. Jimmy, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much for taking my call, Brian. Just calling in to say why I was very pleased to be able to vote for Antonio Delgado for lieutenant governor today. You mentioned that he left Congress to run. He was New York 19. And I'm very disappointed to lose him as my congressman, but in that capacity, saw him just put in a ton of work and in the process of doing that, just winning over a lot of hearts and minds in, as you mentioned, a swing district and state. I think, you know, those in the city sometimes forget that there's a wide variety of viewpoints in New York, and limitations of the lieutenant governor's office notwithstanding, to the extent it gives him a platform to continue putting in the work and winning over hearts and minds, it's going to be good for New York and good for the Democratic Party, too.
Jimmy, thank you very much. We appreciate your call as we continue with WNYC's Bridget Bergen and WNET's Jenna Flanagan and more of your calls. And kind of to Jimmy's point, Jenna, you know what I haven't seen much in the mm-hmm. debates on either side, Democratic or Republican? Candidates running on electability. It didn't get asked directly in the televised debates that I saw, though I didn't see all of them. Swazi has been the one exception who brings it up on his own to my eye. And yet I think perceived electability is probably the biggest reason Joe Biden won the presidential nomination over Bernie Sanders. Are the Dems just not that worried about losing in blue New York, despite the expectations that Republicans will do better than usual this year? And are the Republicans all just playing to their base? Because I certainly haven't seen them bring it up very much, except maybe a little bit, Lee Zeldin.
Well, you know, as was mentioned earlier, it all comes down to turnout. It really, again, as was mentioned, that the voters in the metropolitan area are not necessarily the same kind of Democratic voters that are around the rest of the state. Democrats who are able to win statewide usually have to be able to cover or to carry, I would say, more moderate liberal areas, your Albany's, your Syracuse's, your Rochester's, your Buffalo. And so there could be a comfortableness that those are reliable voters, but it also, again, relies on turnout. What I do think is interesting, though, is I was listening to the discussion, especially from the previous caller in Brooklyn, who was explaining his concerns about the way criminal justice was being handled, is that's an issue that seems to really be tripping up Democrats when they try to talk about it. Jamani Williams seems to be the only, because he's a progressive, seems to be the only person who can clearly articulate perhaps why some of the reform changes that were made or are being pushed for are actually a good thing, whereas the other candidates will either reject or, you know, perhaps give evasive answers. They don't really want to get into that because then you run the risk of losing your more progressive voters or losing your more moderate voters.
We'll continue in a minute. It's New York primary night on WNYC. The polls close in 19 minutes. This is a New York primary night special. I'm Brian Lehrer with WNYC senior political reporter Bridget Bergen and Jenna Flanagan, host of Metro Focus from the WNET Group, a PBS member station. And we're taking your calls. Who did you vote for in the Democratic or Republican gubernatorial primary, the Democratic lieutenant governor primary, or any other office on the ballot today? Or maybe you have a question about this primary for our guests, or an experience from your polling place that you want to share, or even your interaction with your absentee ballot, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let's take another call right now. Here's John in the Bronx. John, you're on WNYC. Hi there. Happy primary night. John, do we have you?
Yes, John?
Yeah, it's you, John. Hi there.
I'm fine. Thank you, Brian, for picking my call. I was thinking of voting for Hoko, but I did not go and vote for her. My reason is this. Hoko did not want to acknowledge the endorsement of Cuomo. But I want you to look at the election of 2018 between Cuomo and Nelson. The average turnout was about 900 plus. And then today the turnout is around 300 and something. That tells you the difference. It is the personality on the ticket. Cuomo still attracts the crowd. And so Hoko should remember it was him who took him to be the lieutenant governor and for her to be assumed the governorship today. Irrespective of whatever has happened to Cuomo, Cuomo still commands a considerable number of support on the grassroots. If even Cuomo decides to contest governorship as an independent candidate, Hoko's dream of becoming a governor is gone.
Interesting. So John,
What I'm saying is, in her public pronouncement, you should give some credit to Cuomo. You shouldn't condemn him. She condemned him, and that took my vote away from her.
Are you personally not troubled by the reasons that Cuomo resigned?
Yes. He have his personal limitations, but I think Cuomo still have unfinished developmental projects to do for the state. That is why I'm still interested in him. Are you going to
move? John, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate it. Who else? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Bridget, a very interesting call there. Of course, there are many reasons that turnout might be lower today than it was in the 2018 gubernatorial primary on the Democratic side between Cynthia Nixon and Andrew Cuomo, two larger-than-life personalities. Maybe there aren't any really among the three. But what about the Andrew Cuomo factor, or the missing Andrew Cuomo factor today?
I mean, certainly it is notable that this is the first time in, you know, many cycles that Andrew Cuomo's name is not on the Democratic gubernatorial ballot. However, I think it's really, really super important to remind people that we have never had a primary quite like the one we are having today because of redistricting, splitting our primaries, bifurcating our primaries so that the election that we are trying to compare turnout to, where, you know, nearly 900,000 people turned out to vote, they were also voting for their assembly and state Senate primary candidates. Those state Senate primaries are not happening until August, when we vote on those congressional primaries. That was also a date that, you know, that was when we still had our primaries in September. I had someone reach out to me earlier today to note that in the 70s, the primaries were all in June, and then they moved into September. And then, you know, we split them to the federal primaries in June, continued to have state primaries in September, and then ultimately moved them all to June. So, you know, we've been moving elections around on voters in a way that I think puts a lot of pressure on people to turn out to vote. If there are parts of New York City that have had special elections, you know, multiple times throughout this year, and, you know, here we are, this is the first of two primaries this summer ahead of a general election, and we have seen from turnout numbers, sadly, that the biggest turnout tends to be in presidential election years, which obviously this is not. And so, turnout is a persistent issue, and it is only made worse by the fact that we have, you know, sliced and diced these elections and the different offices that people are turning out to vote for on multiple dates.
And Bridget, why wasn't this primary for governor ranked choice voting, while the mayoral primary last year in New York City was? We've had several callers over the last few weeks who expected a ranked choice primary after last year. Why was that one ranked choice and this one wasn't?
So ranked choice voting was adopted as part of the city charter, and so it will only apply to city special elections and city primary elections. But it is not something that has been adopted as of yet at a state level. So any of these state races will be the way we are used to, the winner-take-all system. It's similar to, you know, last year folks in Manhattan who were casting their ballot, had a DA's race where it was not ranked choice voting as compared to the primary race, which was ranked choice voting.
Right, because the DA race is technically considered a state race. DA is a function of the state. And Jenna, why don't the Republicans have a lieutenant governor primary like the Democrats do?
Well, my guess is that, I mean, first and foremost, the importance is of who ultimately wins the nomination. I'm going to have to say that it's more indicative of the way that, you know, the messaging for the race has happened and the way that they're approaching this. Yes, it's a position that's going to be filled, but perhaps, you know, the Republicans are seeing this as just ceremonial, and that if I'm going to be the governor, I'm going to be the person in charge. I'll be making all the shots, and this person is your just in case, which is, of course, opposite of what we're hearing a lot of what the Democrats are hoping to make the lieutenant governor position.
Right. Or maybe, Bridget, the Republicans just didn't have anybody who wanted to contest Lee Zeldin, who was originally considered the prohibitive favorite, and I think it has gotten more competitive than people expected at the first, didn't want to contest Lee Zeldin's running mate. You know, there's an old cliche that says in primary elections, Democrats fall in love and Republicans fall in line. You know?
Yeah,
and I mean, the fall in line part is they listen to their party leadership more and don't kind of, you know, try to run a personality reform kind of campaign against their own.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we saw the Republicans and Lee Zeldin team up with Alison Esposito as his running mate. And there is only a primary if there is a challenger. And since there was no other Republican lieutenant governor challenging Alison Esposito, there was nothing for Republican voters to select in the LG race. So not unlike the Democrats, there is the chance that whoever wins the top of the ticket, if it is not Lee Zeldin, we will see this pair up of Alison Esposito and, you know, fill in the blank in this race that, you know, I think throughout the thing that people have said about it most consistently is that it is a very fluid race. So that's another storyline to watch as the polls close tonight after 9 o'clock.
In just 8.5 minutes from now, and we'll see in a few minutes if we have an instantly declared winner in any of these races. Let's go live now to Kathy Hochul's election night event, where WNYC and Gothamist Albany reporter John Campbell is standing by. Hi, John. Can you hear me okay?
Hi, Brian. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. And can you set the scene for us? Where is Kathy Hochul spending primary night, and what does it look like there right now?
Yeah, so I am coming to you live from Tribeca, the Tribeca rooftop event venue. Kathy Hochul is going to be delivering her speech under a literal glass ceiling. I mean, I'm looking at a big skylight, looking to the night sky, and that's not a coincidence. She would be the first woman to win a major party gubernatorial nomination in New York, and they are obviously going for the metaphor here.
Are there prominent supporters we might have heard of, or how would you describe whatever crowd is there so far up on the roof?
Well, there are certainly some prominent supporters. I just saw Carolyn Maloney, the congresswoman who's locked in a tough primary with Jerry Nadler. She just walked behind me. Your usual collection of Democratic establishments. There's, senators, assembly members, and, you know, there's also, I should mention, this is they're hoping it's a celebratory affair. There's three big open bars, a big spread of food that you would find at a wedding. I mean, this is, it's getting very crowded, and they're hoping that it is a joyous occasion and not a somber one.
Tell me more about the food. What are they serving?
I see some pasta dishes. I see some heavy hors d'oeuvres. But the bar seems to be more frequented than the food, I have to say.
The heavy hors d'oeuvres campaign on the Hochul side. Have they indicated, since it's a celebratory tone that you're describing, that they've seen any encouraging returns for either Hochul or Delgado, her running mate, who I presume will be there tonight with her?
Yeah, they're both supposed to be here tonight. So far the talk has been about turnout, and turnout all across the state seems to be rather low. And when low turnout happens, unpredictability happens. So there's a little bit of perhaps unease there. But, I mean, in general, I think it's upbeat. I mean, this is they're playing the party tunes. They're hoping for a quick night. They're hoping that perhaps there could be a quick call after 9 p.m. But, you know, low turnout is the equalizer. I mean, that really, really can shift the race.
WNYC Albany reporter John Campbell, all the way down in Tribeca tonight at the Hochul event. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
And let's go to Susan in the city. Susan, you're on WNYC. Happy primary night.
Happy primary night, Brian. A first-time caller, long-time listener. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to make a point about the low turnout. And I think part of the reason is the lack of convenience of voting. And it seems in this digital age, we should be able to come up with a solution that doesn't require us to show up in person within a specified hourly range. And I think we'd get a lot better turnout if I could log on to a secure site and make my selections. I'll take your feedback off the air.
Thank you very much. Keyword secure. I think, Bridget, there was a time some years ago when people were projecting that the future of elections would be online. Now, if anything, it's going the other way with everybody so afraid of hacking.
Yeah, I think, one of the debates that's actually currently underway is they're looking at election equipment for New York State that would remove paper ballots, hand-filled out paper ballots. And many of the people who are... remove them. And it would become a more electronic machine. And there is people who are some of these kind of staunchest supporters of good government and election reforms are very opposed to these machines because they think it's really important to have that paper to be able to go back and have to audit the election and to be able to look at something other than, the hard drive of a machine to understand how people voted. So I think that there would be a lot of pushback on the idea of, you know, maybe a secure site, though we should note that, you know, that there's a way for overseas voters to do that. One thing that is in place in other states in the country and is extremely popular in places where they have very high voter turnout is vote by mail, where they mail you a ballot and then you mail it back and you have a much longer period of time to do it. Places like the state of Oregon, it's extremely popular there. They have higher voter turnout. And that is something that I think, you know, is among the options for election reform. We'll see if our lawmakers take it up at any point. It's been talked about in the past. It tends to be the subject of pretty fierce attack from Republican opponents who have a,
right.
Think
for some
that
reason,
more participation
ballot.
Is not a good thing.
Yeah, for some reason, absentee voting or mail-in voting has become an artifact of the culture war. And in fact, Jenna, one of the results from last year that was, I guess, part of the Republican surge in last year's elections in New York State is that there was a referendum, there was a ballot question in New York State, as you'll remember, to make mail-in balloting a permanent option, not just during the pandemic, and it lost.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, it did. I think a lot of it is also, you know, this, the traditionalism of the way people have been voting in the way that they feel most comfortable and familiar with. Of course, as we saw after the 2020 election, as Bridget pointed out, the ability to be able to audit an election via paper ballots is now something that I think a lot of people would take a lot more seriously than they might have before, that the results of an election need to be infallible. They need to be, I mean, you can question them maybe, but there needs to be able an ability to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt, this is the way the people voted. So what might have seemed like a lark before, now given the tone or the emotional feeling of the country, makes a lot more sense.
And what about those 40,000 dead people who voted in Georgia? Oh, that never happened. All right. It's 1 minute before 9 o'clock. The polls close in 1 minute. We'll come back after this break and see if any of these races are lopsided enough that they call a winner right away. It's primary night on WNYC. This is a New York primary night special on WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer with WNYC senior political reporter Bridget Bergen and Jenna Flanagan, host of Metro Focus from the WNET Group, a PBS member station. We've got about 5 minutes to go in this show, and then we'll have Reveal on WNYC FM and Fresh Air on WNYC AM. And of course, our news team will be bringing you the New York primary results through the evening as they become known. I don't see any immediate calls of any of these races by any news organization. Bridget, are you seeing anything? Or are there any exit polls or any other indications in advance of how any of this will turn out?
I wish I had the numbers for you, Brian. There's nothing I would like more, but I don't see them yet either. So we're going to have to wait probably a little bit beyond. I think the earliest we've seen some of these results is usually about 5 minutes past the hour, 6 minutes past the hour. So it may be just as we are saying our goodbyes that we, if there are early victors to declare, that we see some of that from either the Associated Press or other outlets. But so far, not yet, but could be coming soon.
Jenna, did any polling during the campaign give indications of what issues were driving people to the polls, those who showed up in this very low turnout election? I mean, to listen to the politicians, and I think you were starting to get at something like this before, it sometimes can feel like Democrats talk a lot about the state of democracy, and now with the Supreme Court rulings, abortion rights and guns, Republicans talk about inflation and street crime. So do the polls bear out that the motivation to vote is breaking down at all along lines like those in New York State this year?
I would assume that they're going to. I've become a little bit skeptical of polling after all of the polls that we got going into the 2016 election. But Given that, I think that they are going to bear out. I mean, these are very, you know, deep and personal issues for a lot of people. And when I say personal issues, you might not live in a neighborhood that is, quote unquote, high crime, or you might not even have a lifestyle that requires you to, you know, ride the New York City subway or something along those lines. But because you're getting a constant drumbeat of criminals are being let out of jail too early and people, there isn't support for victims. And regardless of how you actually feel about that, that's going to be a leading factor. Now, of course, we can't forget the fact that we are, the entire state, the entire country is dealing with an insane level of inflation. Just living in New York State is becoming incredibly difficult. And so if you're somebody who's committed to staying in New York State, then of course, these, what might be the secondary issue, at least on the conservative side after crime, would most definitely be taxes and cost of living. Who's going to make it possible for me to raise a family here?
Now, Bridget, you were telling me on my morning show today that they are counting the votes, especially the absentee ballots, differently this year than in the past. What's changed?
So there was a change to the law for absentee ballots, and it's can we feel it in multiple ways. It's part of the reason why if you had applied for an absentee ballot and then maybe changed your mind, decided to try to go vote in person, you were given an affidavit ballot. Because one of the things that boards of elections have been able to do is to canvass those absentee ballots that they received before early voting ahead of time and then during the period of early voting, so that when we get the unofficial election results tonight as they are coming in, that will include a much bigger chunk of those absentee ballots than we've seen in the past. They used to wait until the last day that absentee ballots could be received. And then, you know, last year they had enacted what was called a cure process, which then could potentially add additional time to when a certain ballot would be counted if there was an error in it that a voter needed to fix. The cure process is still in place, but they can be processing in them in more real time, so that when we get this tally tonight, it should include a lot more of those absentee ballots. We shouldn't have this massive outstanding number as we've had in the past.
So more likely that we will have an actual result tonight. And well, folks, that concludes this New York primary special. Thanks to all of you who called in. Thanks again to our guests, WNYC's Bridget Bergen and Jenna Flanagan from the WNET Group, and WNYC reporters Samantha Max, Catalina Gonella, and John Campbell at the various headquarters, and our engineer who's always on it, creating the illusion of seamlessness, Matt Morando. I'm Brian Lehrer. Results tonight as they come in, and we'll talk about the results tomorrow morning at 10 on The Brian Lehrer Show here on WNYC. Now stay tuned for Reveal on 93.9 FM WNYC, and on AM 820, it's Fresh Air.